All right, lads and lasses and good day, mates. Welcome to another episode of the Tune Under Podcast, the Southern Hemisphere's number one podcast for all things Newcastle United. I'm Lee, I'm joined by Craigie, and we are going to be talking about the game down at Craven Cottage against Fulham. It ended somehow 1-0 to Newcastle. A pretty difficult game on the whole, I think. Craigie, how did, you know, starting at the end, what's your kind of, when you look back at it retrospectively, how do you see that game? What's your kind of overriding thought, apart from just relief?
You know, it was kind of a classic away day performance, like the away day snatch. Obviously, we are the better team than Fulham, so it should have been a bit more comfortable than it was, at least on paper. We'll go with that one. We've already beaten them twice this season, fairly comfortably in both games as well. So I was hoping more of the same, but you can never guarantee, can you? In the way our team is with injuries and everything right now, God knows what's going to happen with that first 45 minutes, 90 minutes or whatever. It could be an absolute car crash, or it could be an absolute amazing, like the last 20 minutes of the West Ham game. Who knows? That's Newcastle United in a nutshell.
Yeah, look, I mean, we all know about the injuries this season. There's not much point in going over that old ground. Everyone knows the state that we're in. I just thought we looked really tired, really jaded in that first half in particular. Eddie Howe said he was happy with the 60 minutes after the first half hour. But as I was just saying to you before we came on here, I thought we weren't even that good until sort of sometime in the second half when we've started to... I mean, all right, but there was that part in the first half where Dubravka went down for a tactical rest, didn't he?
Aye.
and he was complaining about his knee or some bollocks. And camera pans across to the sidelines, and there's the entire squad having a, you know, getting the arse from Eddie. Eddie Howe did not look happy. He had his kind of gritted teeth. He's talking through his gritted teeth. And you're right, maybe we were a little bit more composed after that. But in my mind, really, don't know what you think, but it didn't really get any better until we switched Golden to the right hand side, and then we stuck Barnes in, and almost instantly we looked like we had actually more going on for us, you know what I mean?
Definitely. I mean, we did create chances in the first half. You got to think of that Daisy cutter from Gordon that just went wide, hit the steward in the heat, I think it did, when you look at it on the slow-mo. And there was that opportunity where you put across the face of the goal, and for whatever reason, Murphy's running backwards when he should be running towards the post, and the idea why. But we did create chances, but obviously Fulham definitely had the upper hand in that first 45 by a fair margin.
Oh, they were miles better. Like, but it's the classic thing, you know. We look knackered, a little bit of pace, and they've got pace in the team. I still think Iwobi is a good player. I mean, you might argue he hasn't got an end product, but like, you could say the same about Adama Traore as well. He hasn't got any end product. I know you were comparing the stats of him to the likes of even Scholler, and Scholler eclipses him by an absolute 4-1 mile. You know, but it doesn't have to be the end product. As in the shot to goal, it can still be all the panic that running towards people with pace can cause. And I saw a lot of that with Iwobi. I mean, first half, Lewis Hall was struggling against Iwobi. In my mind, every time it went down the right there, Lewis Hall, he looked well off the pace. I mean, obviously, he's been on his arse for most of the season. He's barely had a run out. So, and you can see from the last two games, certainly, that he's been getting cramp around about the 90 minutes. And all the bloody Fulham fans are booing him for having cramp. It's like, lads, the guy's played like 5 seconds worth of footy all season. You can give him probably a break. I know you think he's wasting time, and in other circumstances, teams definitely would do that. But in our case, because it was Lewis Hall, he was just wrecked, son. He was knackered from all the effort he's been putting in. But he's going to take a little bit more time, and obviously there's only a few more games left of the season. Just every time Iwobi came down that side there, he was skinning Hall. Hall wasn't getting much support from anyone. I mean, I guess that's just the way it goes. And then you mentioned Murphy there as well. Murphy was well off it. There was just a lot of tired brains in that team, wasn't there?
There was, aye. I don't know why it was, whether it was a hangover from the result from the Everton game, which could very well be the case, because nobody likes to drop points in that manner. It was an absolute shit show of a moment from Paul Dummett, which I covered in the instant review. But Yeah, I wonder if that was the reason why everyone was a little bit flat-footed in the maybe first 30 minutes until Eddie decided to give them that first rocket up the arse.
Yeah, maybe. It was just a tough watch. I mean, let's have a look at the squads here. Fulham first as the home team. It was Leno in goal and Castagne. I don't know how you pronounce that. Tosin, I thought, every time he got the ball, he just seemed to just march right through the midfield. Just picked it up and just started running in acres of space. You know, it was like the Red Sea. Bassi, I thought, was excellent as well at the back there. Even managed to get a perfectly good goal. Well, I'm not going to say perfectly good, but even got a goal ruled out from Shaw there. Robinson, pretty handy corners. Plenia, yeah. Tom Kearney, he was all right. Iwobi, I thought, was pretty good. Andreas, William, and Muniz. You say that we're a better team, but there's some pretty decent players in that squad, you know.
Oh, there is, but there's also some dog shit as well. I mean, Castagne, I remember he was absolutely torn a new one on a number of occasions against us last season when he played for Leicester. And Iwobi, I mean, it comes to something when Everton don't want you, you know, where they are in the table. That tells you everything you need to know.
Mate, come on. I'm pretty sure he was trying to escape the sinking ship, surely.
That could very well have been the case, but I said literally from the first minute, Iwobi does not bother me in the slightest. I have no fear in him running at us because he has zero end product. Honestly, that man couldn't finish his dinner. He was such a bad player. Yes, he's got the pace, he's got the strength to beat a man, but he just cannot pick a pass to save his life. He's genuinely a player who is bang average at best. And like I say, going from Everton to Fulham, it's probably a side move, if anything. Everton are by far the bigger club, but Everton obviously heading the wrong direction. But they've got some okay players, some decent players, but they've got a lot of shit in there as well. There's one player in that starting 11 that I would have, and that is Paulinho. I think he's decent on his day. He can be very, very good. But apart from that, not a great deal.
Did he do much today, Plinia? Did he see much from him?
He had a few chances. He flashed probably their best opportunity where he put it across Dubravka's goal, but it kind of skidded off the grass and just went harmlessly wide. But Dubravka was well beaten from it. That was, in my opinion, their best opportunity. That was, what, maybe 20 minutes into the first half. But like pretty much every other Fulham player, they faded well into the second game.
Yeah, I think that was one of those games at Fulham where it doesn't matter how long they played, they just weren't ever going to score a goal. You know, you get those kind of games where it doesn't matter what you do, how much huffing and puffing. I mean, they had like 70-odd% possession, I think, in total by end of game. And to be fair, didn't really give Dubravka much of a struggle. You know, you didn't really do an awful lot. Newcastle's team was pretty much picking itself as per, although returning Golden did mean there was a little shuffle. So Dubravka, my boy Kraft, Shaw, Byrne, and Hall at the back. I mean, that's down to bare bones, isn't it? Jesus Christ. Bruno, Longstaff, Willock in the middle, Murphy and Gordon on the wings, and Isak up front. The bench is looking desperate. Karius, Gillespie, two keepers again. Dummett, Richie, Barnes, Anderson, White, Diallo, and Murphy. So, and just touching on those two keepers, there was a shot there when Dubravka went down for a tactical rest, in the first half, and I was thinking, oh shit, he's injured. Here we go again. Both those keepers were just sitting on their asses having a laugh. There was no movement at all to get off their asses and start doing any warming up. As soon as I saw the pitch, I was like, oh, Craig's right here. This was definitely a tactical. That team. So obviously Gordon came back from his suspension, which I think we probably missed him at Everton. I thought Gordon today was brilliant again. Like everything good in this team is coming through Gordon. I don't know how the hell this boy keeps running, but the engine on him is just incredible. Who else are you picking out this team for some chocolates today? Who do you think did a good job today? I mean, it's hard to say, isn't that?
Dan Burn.
Desperate.
Dan Burn, since he returned to left centre back, he's not put a foot wrong. You think the Everton game, he didn't put a foot wrong. This game, he didn't put a foot wrong. Yes, they had chances, but they were all half chances. There was nothing clear cut and nothing which had Dubravka scrambling or anything like that. Dan Burn, since he's went back to his natural position, is a far better player than what he is at left-back. And I think that may have been taken note by Eddie as well, because I can't imagine, maybe purely because of injuries, that he'd be pushed back to the left-back spot before the season's out.
No, he's buggered to put in the middle, is there? I mean, to be honest, Fulham and Everton aren't really the greatest of tests to see if you're any good in centre-back. I mean, I appreciate that is his classic position, but at times when he's been in centre-back earlier in the season, he looked absolutely dreadful. Like I've said before on this pod that I was regretting the idea of moving him back into the centre because for me, he'd more or less morphed into a left winger. And then, of course, then he has all his troubles down the left again that we all know about, and he starts to struggle with the pace and too many games and so on. Maybe this move into the middle is exactly what Dan Burn needs to not necessarily be legging up the wing all the time. It gives him a little bit more of a chance to sit back if he wants to, and then maybe he's getting some benefit from that. What do you think of Willock?
I said from the get-go that he looked sluggish, and he was annoying me a little bit because he just wasn't the Willock that we know. And it wasn't annoying me the fact that he was having a shit game or anything like that. He just was off his usual get on the ball, get your head down and run with it. There's nobody else in the squad that can do what he does. And when he's not on form, just like same with Bruno, the team suffers big time from it. And he was clearly struggling for whatever reason. And there's talk he's got an Achilles injury or something like it. So that's obviously the reason that was holding him back. But he had one or two decent chances, which led to one of our shots on target, I think it was. But frustrating, but we know why now. It's not because he just couldn't be asked or anything. He was carrying a knock.
I mean, I will say, you know, I can't really pick out any of these people for the first 60 because most of this team was not doing a very good job. Gordon, you know, maybe the exception. I thought Shaw had a good game as well. Longy was meh. Bruno, didn't really see much of him at the start in the first half. Maybe just because we didn't get out of our bloody defensive third for large stretches. Isak was doing a lot of running around like a headless chicken and eventually started dropping deep to try and make things happen, which you never want to see from your forward. And Murphy just seemed right off it as well. When he's on form, he's unplayable at times. He can do some banging shots, do some brilliant balls, some great runs. Today was not one of those days. I thought he had one of his probably his worst games in the black and white. Do you reckon?
Oh, aye. Yeah, he was miles off it as well. Again, whether he's carrying up, whether he's just fatigued or anything, he hasn't played a huge amount of football since he returned back from his injury. He's normally done a bit part role for Miggy. He's come on, what, maybe last 15, 20 minutes, whatever it may be. So he hasn't played an awful lot. Now he has been playing, whether it's just starting to catch up on him, all these extra minutes he's having to put in. We know he can cross the ball. He's probably one of the best crossers of the ball that we've got in the squad next to Trips. He can definitely whip one in, but that just wasn't there today. And his partnership with Kraft was a little better than what it has been in previous games. But the end product going forward, there wasn't out there. It was invisible almost.
And I think, you know, like I said at the start there, when you see Gordon down the right, suddenly starting to make things happen, and you've got Barnes on the other side who can make things happen, the team just looks like a better balance. That's not to say that if Murphy's playing great that we should stick Gordon down there, but obviously it's an option that we can do to make a sub and give people a rest. But on days like this where nothing's working, Willock again, you know, things were just falling apart. Willock's touch was terrible. Clearly he's got something going on. He shouldn't have been rushed back. Stop me if you've heard this story before this season. How many times are we going to have to put up with this? But look, mate, there was nothing really much to talk about in the first half. There's nothing really worth picking out. It was crap. I was sitting there thinking, geez, what am I doing watching this at 1 o'clock in the morning? It's grim. I'm amazed we got in at halftime, 0-0. I've just been reading before I came on here, Eddie gave him another rocket. Everyone started having a bit of words with each other, which is fine, you know, if you get the result in the end. Everyone's being honest and saying, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that, your shit, whatever. I think when Fulham took off Willian, who I think is a great player still, and Tom Kearney, and then we did our sub for bringing on Barnes and switching Gordon, that's when I really felt that we were starting to get a foothold in this game, and Fulham was starting to get pushed back deeper and deeper. We started to notably have more shots at goal. Like, we were doing nothing first off, nothing. Second half, much, much better. Started giving them some things to think about. We were getting the second balls. First half, we were not getting any second balls. It was literally just going back to Fulham and coming straight back at us. And then there's the penalty call. Not the penalty call, sorry. The Shaw goal, which was ruled off by VAR, don't know where they got penalty from there. Lovely play by Gordon again, takes on his man. You can see every time Gordon gets the ball, his head's down, he's firing forward, he's dinking left and right, he's dribbling past his man. It's absolutely brilliant to watch. He then does like a lovely little dink across the area, very, very dangerous ball. Dan Byrne can't quite get at it, but he's charitably, I want to say that he's got momentum going into the back of Bassey, whatever his name is. And basically, Bassey goes down as a result. The ball then falls to Shaw, who drills it into the near corner. Bassey is still on his arse, can't get up quick enough to defend. Shaw goes away, everyone's celebrating, the whole away crowd, which was tremendous today, I thought, by the way. Everyone's celebrating, everyone's very, very happy. Shaw's actually fist pumping and everything. Then we see that it's getting reviewed. Then you see the referee getting called to the sideline, and it's like, fucking here we go again. You see the replay. This referee, I think this was his third Premier League game, so he's quite fresh. He's quite a bit of a newbie, you know? So he's probably more inclined to listen to what the VAR guys say, but let's not kid ourselves. If you go to that TV on the side of the field, you're basically going to do whatever the VAR have told you. And he rules it out and gives a free kick to Fulham. How did you see that one?
I'm going to use Gordon's goal against Arsenal in the 1-0 win as an example. And Jack brought this up in the chat earlier on today. Joe Linton's push on, I can't remember who it was.
Gabriel, wasn't it?
Aye. Basically, that push on the Arsenal player was a lot more of a foul than what Dan Byrne's was on Shirley Bassey. I genuinely thought it was an okay goal because the flight was over them. He wasn't getting to the ball, not by any stretch. Yes, there was a push. Yes, there was contact, but you're always going to get that. And did the player make the most of the contact? He probably did. And Shaw puts it in. I think he should have stood. And this isn't me blacking my tinted glasses on or anything like that. I genuinely thought it was an okay goal. There wasn't anything physically wrong with it. There's always a bit of jostling, a bit of tussle in the box when a cross comes in or anything like that, and it should have stood. But obviously it wasn't, and for the second time in however many days, the ref goes to the monitor, and this time he made the wrong call, whereas the Evan game he made the right call because that was a blatant penalty, no matter which way you look at it. But I think we were wrongly aggrieved on that one. Your thoughts?
Well, I'll be honest. Look, I'll hold my hands up. At the time, I was fuming, like a proper macron. I was fuming. So when that went over and they started talking about it being reviewed, I thought that the reason why they were going to rule it out was because of the push on Byrne. But they couldn't really do that because, as you said, the ball had basically missed both of them. I don't even know if it touched Byrne. I can't really remember if it touched him or not. But obviously, Bassey, whatever his name is, Shirley Bassey, he goes down on his arse. There's clearly momentum from Byrne. He's clearly gone into the back of him and forced him forwards, at least, if nothing else. Players will always go down in the box. It's the easiest way of, you know, getting a free kick and getting rid of the danger. Lovely finish by Shaw. And then when I thought about it afterwards, when the commentators were saying why they thought the VAR had ruled it out, they basically said that it wasn't the initial ball with Byrne and Bassey. It was the fact that because Byrne had bundled over Bassey, he was then, wasn't in a position to defend that shot. And I suppose if he had been on his feet, that shot from Shaw would have been easily cleared off the near post because he was, you know, the gap was basically the size of him. He would have just stood there and cleared it. So I think not the first motion, but the second motion was why they overturned it. You're shaking your head here, mate, but does that not actually make some kind of sense in your brain at all?
It does, but it's all ifs and buts, isn't it? They don't know whether he was going to be able to clear that shot from Shaw. As far as we know, Shaw could have rifled it through his legs.
I know, but the point is, the ball goes where it goes, and the guy can't defend it properly because he's been bundled onto his arse. So they're looking at facts. They're saying, well, he's on his arse. He's not on his feet. He can't defend that corner because he's been pushed over by Dan Byrne in the first motion. Therefore, it's a foul in the second motion, second action.
I'm not buying that, to be honest. I'm definitely not buying that. I thought it was a perfectly legitimate goal, and I think we're being harsh done by on that. I really do.
All right. Well, look, there's a litany of these VAR decisions this season. You could take a bloody dartboard and just fling a thing into the end of the
like
and there'll be some stupid, ridiculous VAR thing going on there. It was overturned. It was a free kick. But look, it didn't matter that much because it was only a few minutes later, 6 or 7 minutes, whatever it was, and we get the goal that we've been dying for. I was in the chat going like, VAR that, you fuckers, like when I went flying in, because I was still a little bit aggrieved. I hadn't really thought about why they might have ruled it out. 81 minutes from who else but Bruno, the Kinder Egg loving Brazilian, marking his 100th game. I thought last game was the 100th, but apparently this game was the 100th, with a goal and the win. I think he started the attack, the whole move in our half, and he finds Barnes, and Barnes chips in at the box. It gets lazily cleared. I mean, it's a really poor kind of tired clearance, I suppose. And it just falls nicely to Bruno to run onto it and rifle it with his right foot. Pretty close to Leno, actually. I guess it was just the body of people, the power behind it, and therefore the speed, because I'm sure Leno kind of almost got a mitt on it if he didn't even actually maybe get a little finger to it. Lovely goal. It you know, felt that because the injustice of that VAR decision that we deserved to get that goal. And Bruno goes celebrating like a lunatic with the away fans again. Nice goal, Craig. I'm trying to think of what else you can say about that, because it was basically just like, you know, we'd just been screwed over by VAR, and then we got another one where they couldn't do nothing about it.
Well, one thing I want to give kudos to is Elliot Anderson for his little backheel flick onto Bonds.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yes, because if that doesn't happen, then the goal doesn't happen. It's as simple as that. That was very, very clever. Yeah. And, you know, these are the little things that a lot of players see Anderson do. He is yet to bring goals to his games, and I'm sure they will come at a time. But without that little backheel flick or whatever it was, that goal doesn't happen. And Barnes being Barnes, I think he scored two against West Ham. He created he got the assist against Everton. He got a hand in this goal as well. His percentage to being part of either the build-up or assisting to goals in the last few games is incredible. And he's never even completed 90 minutes either.
It's what we've
went off in all those games.
It's what we expected to get from the very start of the season, mate. We're basically being robbed. We've been robbed the whole time from him being injured. And he started his career with Newcastle pretty well as well, and then he gets his injury, and then you don't see him for friggin' ages. But yeah, I mean, it was nice to get that goal because you know, when the VAR rules it out and it's so late in the game, even if you are at that time on top, and we were at this point, let's be honest, it's that classic, like, it's not going to be our game. It's not going to be our day. We're not going to get anything out of this. We've rode our luck. Our luck's run that out with VAR. How's this going to finish? Is it Fulham just going to leg it up the other side of the pitch and snatch it, you know? And he couldn't really be upset about it. They played their part in this game. But I think mostly, apart from the VAR thing, I just felt like relief. But then, sort of straight away, it's like, oh shit, there's still 9 minutes to go until the end of the second half. And you know there's going to be a ton of extra time. And how much was it? 10 minutes or something? 9 minutes?
10, 11 minutes of total added on time at the end, eh?
It's just a ludicrous amount of time. You think you're almost at the end of it, and you've still got, like, you know, another quarter of the game to go or whatever. It was a hard watch to the end, but somehow or other we managed to get over the line at the end for a very, very important victory. You know, we got the win against West Ham, against all the odds, thanks to Shithouse from Shithouse Gordon and his shit housing. Everton was obviously kicking the nuts, thanks to Dummy. And this game could have easily gone in the other direction, and we could have easily lost this by a few if Fulham knew how to score a goal. I think this game would have been gone in the first half easy. And we've got a win here as well. So 7 points out of nine is 3 games in a week. That's not bad going, really. It's nuts when you think about how bad this team has been decimated all season with injuries. And here we are still pulling out results at the end of the season, and we're still in the top eight. It's amazing, isn't it?
I mean, if you had asked any sensible Newcastle fan who's got the head screwed on, that would you take 7 points from a possible nine from these 3 games in the space of a week? And I guarantee you every one of them would say yes. There's not many turnarounds in that. We should be taking 9 points from those 3 games. West Ham, they're a quality team. Everton, that was just pure stupidity from Dummett. And our form in the capital in the league has been shit this season. We beat Fulham comfortably at home, 3-0, but they did go down to 10 men quite early in that game. And then we beat them in the FA Cup or the League Cup, whichever it was. But that was a chain side. It wasn't their best starting 11. So our form in the capital in the league, kind of what swayed me to think we're going to get beat in this one. But nah, I would gladly have taken 7 out of 9 points if somebody offered them to me before this time last week.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think I might be wrong on this, but I think that is 4 wins in 11 at the capital. I could be wrong about that, but probably I'm wrong. My head for stats is not great. But yeah, terrible on the road. All season being gash, even when we had the full team, not great. So this, even Eddie Howe, in fairness to him, he says, I think that's up there with one of our best wins of the season because of the circumstances. And he's right. It is.
Yeah, absolutely. To draw a parallel, I don't know if you remember the Brentford game last season down at their place, where first half, we played absolutely dog shit. Ivan Toney scored a penalty, I think it was, and then Pope saved the penalty. Eddie made changes at half time, and we've come on and absolutely took control. And that, to me, is a very similar parallel game. And, you know, that's Eddie just working his magic at half time, doing what he does. And it shows the players still believe and have faith in him to come out to give that type of performance. None of the players in there, as far as I'm concerned, are thinking, you know what, I'm not really a fan of Eddie's tactics or his game plan or anything now. I'm just going to wander around the pitch like a headless chicken, like Rashford was doing the other day. Every single one of those players are playing for the shirt and they're playing for the manager. And that goes to show from that halftime team talk and how they came out and played.
That's true. And, you know, we need it as well. And I think that's part of that will probably be because there is still something that we can achieve this season. It's going to be just getting into Europe again. But given the circumstances, that would be an unbelievable achievement. Really, really would be. As Jack said, actually, probably even better than Champions League last year. Because last year, there was a lot of teams, I think, that were kind of well below where they should have been. Their levels were well down. Mm-hmm. A lot of those have corrected themselves this season. Chelsea's kind of not really, but they're starting to put it together now as well. They're right behind us. And we're still there. We're still in the conversation, still in the mix. Absolutely incredible. That was our third victory over Fulham this season, as you've mentioned, and the fifth consecutive league and cup success at Craven Cottage. So they must fucking hate the sight of us. As soon as that Newcastle United bus turns up, be like, oh, bollocks.
Especially if Dubravka's in goal now. They've yet to score past Dubravka in 6 appearances now, I think. So I think we'll just have him play every Fulham game from now on, even when he was a tie, we'll just bring him back.
I thought everyone knew you just go down the wing and shoot to the other side of the goal. He can't save shit like that, can he? That's Newcastle's second away clean sheet in 24 Premier League outings. Second clean sheet in 24 outings.
Ouch.
You know, it's been one of those seasons, hasn't it? Let's have a look at some stats and we'll just wrap this up because there's not much else to talk about, really. Possession was, in the end, 67 to Fulham to our 33. They had 14 shots to our 12. I reckon most of them came in the first half quite easily. They only had 4 on target to our 5, and it's somehow their XG is 1.27 to our 0.59. The day I understand what the fuck that's about, it will be the day. They had more than double the completed passes than we did. Their accuracy was much better. Which is impressive just on its own. Much more touches in the opposition box than us. But they didn't do as much running. So let's have a look at the table. So that leaves us in 8 still. But it was an important win, wasn't it? Because West Ham, sneaky bastards, they managed to clinch it at the very end through James Ward-Prowse winner. So they've managed to maintain their position just above us. So we're on 47 in 8 points. 8th place on 47 points. West Ham, 7th position on 48 points. Their goal difference is turd. It's -4. Ours is 13. So that goal difference could yet come in handy. Had we not lost to Everton, had we not drawn to Everton, we would have been in 6th place as things stand. Man United in 6th currently on 48 points with a -1 goal difference. It's crazy. Spurs, our next opponent, in 5th with 57 points. Villa, who drew with Brentford, I think it was, remained 4th on 60 points. And then it's City on 70, Liverpool on 70, and Arsenal on 71. So, Chelsea, as I mentioned before there, they beat Brighton, I think. Was it Brighton they beat? They beat somebody. Anyway, they've gone from being like nowhere to coming right up behind us, and they've got two games in hand over us now. They're on 43 points in ninth. We're on 47 points in eighth. So if Chelsea manage to get those two wins, we will drop a point there, drop a place. But again, though, this just reinforces what an incredible effort from the lads this has been, given everything that's gone on this season, doesn't it? I mean, eighth place, in with a shout for top six, even, you know, maybe. But seventh, I suppose, is where we're probably aiming for. It's all to do, isn't it? We go into the end of these last few games, and we've still got something we can fight for. It's still in our hands.
Oh, God, I absolutely. And again, looking at it on paper, there's probably only two other fixtures which you think, you know, could be a bit of a struggle, and that's Spurs and Man United. The rest are teams either in the bottom half of the table. I think the only one is Brighton. They're currently sat 10th, so obviously they're borderline. We've got them to play as well. But we've still got Burnley. We've still got Sheffield United to play. We've still got players in and around the bottom off table. Brentford, we've still got to go down there and give them a game. So in terms of our fixtures, I think we've probably got a game on paper, the easier run. Chelsea, they've still got to play Spurs and Arsenal before the season's out. And both of those teams are fighting for something. Arsenal, they'll want this title so bad after literally dropping it like a bad smell last season. And Spurs, they will want Champions League football, which may be a bit of a struggle considering that they are 3 points behind Villa, albeit with two games in hand. So there's a lot of fighting going on for a lot of places and a lot of competition for Europe, whether it be Champions League or Europa League or Conference League. But best thing is, it's still in our own hands, isn't it? We're not relying on anybody else, really. We can still do it ourselves. And getting a win against Spurs, who unfortunately I did predict we're going to lose on in my 10-game running. But I still think we are very capable of doing it, and I do think we will. Europa Conference League is where we will get.
Yeah, and well-deserved it'll be. Bloody hell. As you say, next game is against Spurs at St. James's Park. A nice early 12:30 kickoff for us, Craigie. 9:30 p.m. kickoff. Absolutely glorious, isn't it? Change. Absolutely fantastic. Take that every day. We'll have to see how we go there, if we can struggle to get bloody men out on the pitch or not, if, you know, see how we go. You never know with Spurs. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they leave huge gaps behind them, so we'll see how we go. But I'm not really personally expecting too much from that one. Nothing more to say really on this one, Craigie, so I think we'll just leave it there. Thanks for your time, mate. And if you've enjoyed this, please give us a like and subscribe, and we will see you for the next one. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.